That was cute. Yep, I'm semi-precious. It's another stone joke. Well, it's good to see all of you. So many of you here today. I think we know most of you. There's a few faces. I'm going to tilt this up a little bit. I do bring you greetings from Eagle Rock. We're trying to figure out a better name than the Eagle Rock Church or Los Angeles Church. Many times when we go to different places, they'll ask, where are you from? And we'll say, Hollywood. Now, how many of you ever heard of the Hollywood Church of God, right? We need one, right? And we are not that far away. So we've been called the Arcadia Church, the Los Angeles Church, the Eagle Rock Church. In fact, I'm on Elders Forum, and a couple of the guys know. Sometimes I'll put down John Garnett, Hollywood. And where's that? I thought you were in Eagle Rock. No, we're in Hollywood. No, it is good to be with all of you today. So the change in service times again, so to accommodate Mr. Weber. Tell him to drive faster, right? You don't have to change times, right? Just tell him, put it down, get on the freeway. We only hit four, we got here on time, believe it or not, and we only hit five accidents. We didn't create them, we just drove through them. Now, what's interesting about the first message Mr. Beatty gave, I nudged my wife gently and delicately, that the Bible study, we have an adult Bible class, similar to your Bible chat, and we did it on the parable of the talents. So we thought that was interesting. And I used Matthew predominantly instead of Luke, which has the minas, because they started with minas, and then they minus the minas, and it just gets really confusing. So we just sticked with the talents, which truly don't mean talents. It's weights of measure, but anyway, he did a great job. But those are fascinating parables. So we spent quite a bit of time on give and take and what people understood about that particular parable. Today what I'd like to talk to you about is something that we all have near us or around us more than we realize. Now, it's about gates. Now, maybe you're blessed enough to live in a gated community. I don't, but I've been to gated communities, and you have to have a little passcode, and you punch it in, and it doesn't work 12 times, and you have to call the owner, and I said, oh, no, it's 16-534-1 star, right? And so you redo it, and they finally go, and this big, beautiful gate opens up, and I'm sure we've all been to those homes or those areas. There are garden gates. There are gates to the yard. There's the gates of the city. Some cities, in fact, have pillars outside their city limits, and they have, you know, non-functioning but ceremonial gates at the city limits. There's iron gates and wooden gates. The question, what are gates for? What is their purpose? Their purpose is typically, predominantly, is to delineate one area from another. This is one area, the gate opens, and you're in a different or another area. It denotes or delineates also ownership, property boundaries. When you go through the gate, you're now in the property of someone else. In fact, a lot of the gates that I've gone through and I've had to go through the estate gates, it says, what does it say on the pillar next to the gate? Private property. So the property you're in, outside the gate, isn't private. You cross that gate, you're now on private property. And they want you to know that. And there's nothing wrong with that. The gates are designed to do a few things. One, it's to keep things in, right? There's usually a gate and a wall that surrounds the property or the land. It's to keep some things in. And gates, in many cases, are meant to keep things out. We used to have a small garden when I was a kid, and we had a little gate, and it was to keep the dog that we had, and we had even a duck to keep him out of the garden. The gate didn't work very well, but sometimes a gate is there to stop things from getting in. There were gates, as you know, in ancient times. There were fortified gates to the cities and to some of the smaller towns. There were gates of wood, there were gates of stone, and gates of iron. How many of you have ever been to Jerusalem? A couple of you have. Good. Good. As you know, there are many gates that go into Jerusalem, and any good pictorial of Jerusalem will show you the different gates. There's the Damascus Gate. There's a Golden Gate. A Jaffa Gate, a Lion's Gate, Herod's Gate, the New Gate, Zion Gate. There's even a Dung Gate. There's Watergate. I'm kidding. I couldn't resist. So everybody over 50 laughed. But they are regular features of larger cities. When you go to cities in America, there's not so many gates to the city. There's keys to the cities, but not so many gates. You go to Europe, and you will see many towns that still have their gates, and they're quite large. If you've ever been to the British Museum, they have the gates that guarded Assyrian temples, and they are enormous. They're the winged lions, and I'm sure you've seen them. Those are the gates to Assyria and Babylon. I'd like you to, if you would, to think about these gates as we turn to Deuteronomy chapter 12. And we're going to spend a lot of our time in Deuteronomy, and typically I don't particularly, my style is not to move around into different verses. This message, however, requires it, because I couldn't get all that I wanted out of one section. And I usually stay in one section and go verse by verse, word by word in many cases. In this case, I want to give you an idea of a flavor of maybe some verses that you've read over many, many times, but to look at them a little differently, because they have some key phrases, key structural words in them that are very, very important, that the Western mind, and even the modern mind, would look right by. So in Deuteronomy chapter 12, verse 1, gives the introduction. He says, "These are the statutes and judgments which you shall be careful to observe in the land which the eternal God of your fathers is giving you to possess all the days that you live on the earth. You shall utterly destroy all the places where the nations which you shall dispossess serving other gods, on the high mountains, on the hills, and under every green tree." In verse 12, we jump to that verse, and it's starting to talk about as God speaks to the people through Moses. He now starts to talk about not generalities, but he speaks about very specific ideas. And he says, "And you shall," verse 12, "rejoice before the Eternal your God, you and your sons and your daughters, your male and female servants, and the Levite who is within your gates, since he has no portion nor inheritance with you. Take heed to yourself that you do not offer your burnt offering in every place that you see, but in the place which the Eternal chooses. In one of your tribes, there you shall offer your burnt offerings, and there you shall do all that I command you. However, you may slaughter and eat meat within all your gates, whatever your heart desires, according to the blessing of the Eternal your God, which he has given you. The unclean and the clean may eat of it, of the gazelle and the deer alike. Only you shall not eat the blood. You shall pour it on the earth like water. You may not eat within your gates the tithe of your grain or your new wine or your oil, of the firstborn of your herd or your flock, or any of your offerings which you vow, or your freewill offerings, or the heave offerings of your hand. But you must eat them before the Eternal your God in the place which the Eternal your God chooses, you and your son and your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, and the Levite who is within your gates. You shall rejoice before the Eternal your God in all to which you put your hands. Take heed to yourself that you do not forsake the Levite as long as you live in your land." Now, as I read that to you, I kind of skewed your thinking a little bit, only because of the introduction I gave to it. And so when I talked about gates, and I read these passages, which we've all read many, many times, talking about the feast, about clean and unclean, invariably your mind, I would hope, focused or at least stopped a little bit, kind of like a little speed bump every time I use the phrase "within your gates" or "the place your God shall choose." "Within your gates" is a very interesting phrase. He says to you to rejoice with all within your gates, and you can eat anything within your gates. You can't eat the tithe within your gates. He places his name in a special place, and you may eat with these people all within your gates. It's an interesting phrase. We don't use that phrase anymore, but it's in God's law, and I think it's there, and it is there dozens and dozens and dozens of times. And I think it's there for a reason. Why the reference to gates? I have a gate at my house. It's a kind of a steel iron gate that goes into the backyard. It's not a very big gate. But what about these gates that he's talking about? Does it refer to a home? Does it refer to the city? Does it refer to the area and which they inhabited. Well, when was Deuteronomy written? Where were the Israelites predominantly? They were in the desert. They were living in what? Tents. It was very portable. Very, very portable. They did not know where they were going month to month. So why the reference to gates? Could it refer to someone in a tent? What if you don't have servants? I don't know. The last time I looked, I didn't have any servants. I've tried making my children my servants. It has backfired on me horribly. They've never allowed me to forget it. I don't have any servants. I've looked around. I'm not sure what a Levite would look like. But I haven't got any Levites either. So what does this mean? Is this a phrase that just does not apply? Or does it apply? Many times God gives us phrases that we just don't understand because we didn't live in 1400 BC. Now we can read all the historical documents and all the commentaries that we like, but we have no LA Times or San Diego, what is it, the Tribune down here? I looked it up. Is it San Diego Union, right? Right. Yeah, I got it. They had no San Diego Union. Is it the Union Tribune? I don't want to get hung up on this, but I got to know. It is the San Diego Union Tribune? It's not the San Diego Tribune Union. Union Tribune? They dropped the Union? Okay, good. So anyway, we have no San Diego newspaper from 1400 BC. It doesn't exist. We have little clay tablets, and we can decipher what some of them mean, but we don't really know what the phrases mean. Right? 1500 years ago, if you just said to, if God had told Moses, tell the people of Israel, put a sock in it. Right? You know what that means. Right? Put a sock in it. Well, they would know. Moses, excuse me, what does that mean? They use terms of the time which we do not understand. We think we do. The phrase within your gates is not that hard. The commentaries are very clear. It is talking about an area of responsibility that this individual is to take care of, no matter what it is. He was talking to people in tents. So none of the Israelites turned to the other Israelites. I think he's probably referring, when he says within your gates, to Shlomo. With Shlomo, he's got that big house in the wilderness here. No, there was no one there. They all were in tents. They're all the same. So it had to be applicable to everyone. And it's talking about an area that they exercise responsibility or some type of control over. You can see that in these verses. He tells you what you can do and what you can't do. Who to think about. When it says to you in verse 12, and you shall rejoice before the Eternal your God, you and your sons and your daughters. Where would that be? We call that home. We call that our house. We call that the area where our family is, if they still live with us. And remember, in that culture, which was a wonderful, wonderful way to live, is they would have, right, the mothers, the fathers, the children, maybe some aunts. They had a lot of the family members living together. They all went together. Now, you know, we would make fun of that. I saw a big sign on the way, not down here, but when I was driving recently, and it said, meet strangers, invite your in-laws. Right? You laughed. We just don't live like that, but they did. They did live like that. And many times when we're so separated as we are in this country from many of the people we love, Becky's all of my wife's family, they're all in Ohio. Right? Mine are all out here. Sometimes I wish I was in Ohio. Why? Because all my relatives are out here. But we don't live like they did. But they lived together in large families. In fact, the phrase when it says your sons and your daughters, it was another phrase that meant your family, anyone that was a part of your family. He is talking about a home, the area of responsibility within your gates. And we'll talk about that because you have gates. In fact, we'll talk about the whole concept of gates, the ideas both physically and spiritually about gates, because you have many, many gates. You have many, many different kinds of gates, and they're all incredibly important. And they all teach us some great responsibilities. I want you to turn over to a very, very famous section of Deuteronomy, chapter 6. Now, to Jews, all Jews, this is almost ground zero. This is the Shema. It is uber, uber important. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, beginning in verse 1, it says, now, this is the command, and these are the statutes and judgments which the Eternal your God has commanded to teach you, that you may observe them in the land which you are crossing over to possess. You see the similarity of what we read prior in chapter 12. So Deuteronomy is very, very much about them, a lot of the instructions when they go over to possess the land. That's the context. He says that you may fear the Eternal your God to keep all his statutes and his commandments, which I command you, your sons and your grandson, all the days of your life. Notice again the inclusion of family. All the people around you, including you, are to observe these laws, these commandments. He said that you may fear the Eternal, your sons and your it says, which I command you, you and your son and your grandson, all the days of your life. Does it mean granddaughters or daughters? Absolutely it does. It means everybody in your home, everyone around you. He says, all the days of your life, that your days may be prolonged. Therefore, hear, O Israel. That's where they get the word Shema. The word Shema means hear. When you hear the word Samuel, it's Shemuel. It means one who hears. Shema Israel. And be careful to observe it, that it may be well with you, that you may multiply greatly as the Eternal God your fathers has promised you, a land flowing with milk and honey. And here are the verses of the Shema. Some of the most important words that a Jew can say, and must say, in fact, every day. Hear Shema, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord our God, the Eternal is one. You shall love the Eternal your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. There's family again. And shall talk of them when you sit down and sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. It's pretty focused, isn't it? It's pretty important, isn't it? And they are to recite this each and every day, Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 6 in particular. But he says, you shall teach them to your children. It says, when you talk by the way, when you sit in your house, when you rise up, when you lie down. Where? In your home. In your home. He says, not only that, he says, there'll be frontlets at your eyes. You shall have them as a sign on your hand. Now, I think the last time I spoke to you, we talked about some of the trappings of Judaism. I do not personally believe we need to do this. I think I can prove it. However, it's still an important idea. It's still an important illustration. You know, the Jews put on their prayer equipment, we'll call it, and they wrap it around their arm and they have it on their hand and on their head. This is what they feel is fulfilling this. When, and I'm sure you've seen, when a devout Jewish man does this, he puts something between his eyes, which is a box full of, there's scripture inside that box, and when he has it wrapped around his arm, and they go through an incredible ritual every day. There should be a frontlet sign on your hand, frontlets between your eyes. Here's what's interesting. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. This is an interesting physical reminder, but it has spiritual implications. Now remember, they're wandering in tents. They're moving around. It would be interesting to see how these were applied in the 1500s BC. But what's interesting is they have an expression of it today. The word there, doorpost, which you're very familiar with, is the word mezuzah. How many of you have ever heard the word mezuzah? No, it's not kazoo, it's mezuzah. A couple of you have. This was given to me by a friend back east, and this is a mezuzah. And what a mezuzah is, means doorpost, You're to take this, and there's two comes with two nails, and inside of this are written on vellum or on a very special piece of paper, verses from Deuteronomy that are rolled, catch this, in a certain direction with a certain kind of ink on a certain type of paper. And it's only to be written on by a pious scribe. It's very important. And then they put them in this nice holder. And I don't want to take it out, but then you fasten it to your doorpost with nails. As you can readily see, I didn't do what he thought I was going to do. Now, I have it on the wall out of respect and out of interest next to my desk at home. But what they do is they will put this, in fact, on the doorpost leading into their home, and they'll put it, whether they're Ashkenazi or Sephardic, at an angle. We can spend the next 20 minutes, we can spend the next 2 or 3 hours discussing what direction to put this sucker, because they have the laws that explain it. In any event, they put it at an angle. When they come into the home, they put their hand on their mouth, and they put their hand on the mezuzah. That God, this is the expression of the commandment and observation of the commandment. Let me tell you how important it is. A mezuzah, how many of you have seen them you may have heard of them. How many of you have seen them on a door? Quite a few of you. You go to New York or New Jersey, you see them everywhere, right? You see them on goyim houses. Right, non-Jews. Let me tell you how important this is. I'm not making light of this at all. I have this. I mean, it's pretty cool. I'm dying to open it up, and I thought, I better not leave it alone. I trust that there's paper in there. Now, you want to open it now? No, we better not. I've been that sitting there for years. There are more Jews that buy mezuzahs for their home, for their doorpost, than keep the Passover every year. It is the number one most observed ritual in the halakha by a Jew. It is an important issue with them. Now, I bring this up to you only for illustration purposes, for the record. Let me be clear. Can we talk? I am not advocating you go out and buy a mezuzah. I didn't. But it's an important illustration that we can see today. Why do they do this? Because this practice is at least 1,000 years old. It's because the concept of the home and the gates that you have are critical. In fact, uber-devout Jews buy one of these for every room in the house, as long as it's 6 foot square. I'm serious. It's got to be 6 feet by 6 feet minimum. The reason is, it says, you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. And in fact, in many Jewish cities, you'll see a type of a mezuzah embedded into the walls. It's an expression of the scripture, because they are the gates. They're their gates, and we have gates. So this Shema that we have read so many times, it has these spiritual implications that they are to remember these things. And it has to do to the point where when they go into their home, they're to remember them, because this is within your gates. And it's all within the same concept. Deuteronomy chapter 11, if you'll turn there. God did not say it once to them. And I'll say it again. I am not advocating in any way, shape, or form, symbolically or literally, to purchase this implement. It means nothing. I think it's a very colorful and interesting historical item, but no more, no less. In chapter 11, he recaps again in Deuteronomy. He says, therefore you shall love the Eternal your God and keep his charge, his statutes, his judgments, his commandments always. Know today that I do not speak with your children who have not known and who have not been seen the chastening of the Eternal your God, his greatness and his mighty hand with his outstretched arm. He's talking basically to them. And he goes on later in this chapter and again recaps in verse, I think it's 18. He says, verse 18, therefore you shall lay up these words. What words? The words you just read. Throughout this book of Deuteronomy, you shall lay up these words of mine, God, God's words, in your heart and in your soul, and bind them as a sign in your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. We see it again. You shall teach them to your children, speaking to them when you sit in your house, which is where? Within your gates. When you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. And you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates, that your days and the days of your children may be multiplied in the land which the Eternal swore to your fathers to give them, like the days of the heavens above the earth. So there are reasons why our homes are important. And we have responsibilities for the people inside our gates, wherever they may be. So he recounts this. It gives us a sense of borders, of confine. There is a door to this room. It is a gate. There is another gate to get out of this building, another door. When you go home and get in your car, that is another door or gate that you will go through. We have many, many physical gates in our life. In Deuteronomy chapter 14, we won't turn there, but it talks about the Feast of Tabernacles, much like it did in Deuteronomy chapter 12, where it talks about to provide for the people within your gates, within your responsibility. In Exodus chapter 20, if you'll go there, please. Exodus chapter 20. Chapter 20, Exodus is what chapter? The giving of the Ten Commandments. Incredibly, another set of important verses that we know well. Many of us have them on plaques as we do in our home. They're that important. They have always been that important. Exodus chapter 20 in the church. And it says in particular, the longest of the commandments, it says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shall you labor and do all of your work. But the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Eternal, your God. In it you shall do no work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. There's that phrase again. That's that phrase. For in 6 days the Eternal made the heaven and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Eternal blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it, and we're to observe it. And we're to observe it within our gates. Where's your gate? Where's your primary gate, physically? You've got a key for it. It's called your home or your apartment. Wherever you live, the tent you live in. It doesn't matter where you live or how long you've lived there. It doesn't matter whether it's a palace or something very modest. That is your gate. That is your domicile. So God says, you're not to work, and neither is anyone inside your house, on your property, within your gates. They are not to work. They are to observe the Sabbath. Why? Because you have a responsibility that God gives you over the things He gives you. You are to have stewardship. So we ask ourselves, how does this apply today, specifically? So the question is asked, what are our own personal gates that God gives us? Well, number one, we've already said one, is our home. Your home. And you and your spouse, or if it's you alone, it doesn't matter whether you are alone or you are married and have 15 kids or 15 relatives, and it's an 18-bedroom home or it's a one-bedroom home. It doesn't matter. There's no specificity here. He's saying it's so inclusive. If you've got servants, it does include them. If you do have sons and daughters, it includes them. In fact, later we know it also includes what that you have control over? Animals. Anything that you have control over. That's what you have control over. So our home, our tent, our apartment, where we live. We are to apply the issues of the Sabbath to that because we have a responsibility. You have no responsibility whatsoever over my gate. And I have absolutely, positively, no responsibility for yours. It says in the law about a pledge. A good study is to look up the idea, concept of a pledge. If someone borrows something from you as a pledge, and they take it home, and it's overdue coming back, Does the law, this is a little quiz here, we're not going to turn to it. Are you allowed to go in that person's home to get it? Absolutely not. You shall not go in their house. Why? It's not your house. It's their house. They're responsible for their gates, and you're responsible for yours. So how do we apply these issues around us? So number one is our home. The people that are in our home, if you are the matriarch or the patriarch or the one in responsibility, it is your responsibility for the people in your home. No one else. You. Something bad happens, you're in trouble. They are within your gates. The law says over and over again, you are responsible for the things that you've been given to control, to take charge of the things that you have been given. We have a young man who's staying with us for a while, very nice young man. He's not part of our family, but he, you know, like you have friends, like we have friends, and you know, they're family, right? And so when he came over, and he's been over many, many times, and he's doing some work locally, and would you mind if I stayed with you? Absolutely not. And so I told him, you've already been here once. You know where everything is. Nobody's going to pick up after you. Nobody's going to get anything for you. You're part of the family. By the way, I need the lawn mowed. Didn't work. Didn't work with my kid. Not working with him. Am I responsible for that young man when he's in my home? 100%. Right? Who do you think his mom and dad are going to come after if anything happens to that young man? He's an adult. He's going to college. He's going to come after me. Do you know why? He's within my gates, and it's my responsibility. What's interesting also is the relationship that we have with others in relation to our home and the area we live. Turn with me, if you would, to Deuteronomy chapter 24. It tells me we're going to stray too far from Deuteronomy. But you can get a sense very, very easily that God is very serious about this, because he uses this, I don't want to call it so much a catchphrase, but that's what it is. It has great meaning, and it's used repetitively, dozens and dozens of times. In Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 10, I gave you the answer, now I'm going to give you the background behind it. When you lend your brother anything, you shall not go into his house to get his pledge. You shall stand outside, and the man to whom you lend shall bring the pledge out to you. And if the man is poor, you shall not keep his pledge overnight. You shall in any case return it, the pledge to him again when the sun goes down, that he may sleep in his own garment and bless you, and it shall be righteousness to you before the Eternal your God. Verse 14. The thought continues here, and you'll see how it's all bound together. You shall not oppress a hired servant who is poor and needy, whether one of your brethren or one of the aliens who is in your land within your gates. Each day you shall give him his wages and not let the sun go down on it. For he is poor and has set his heart on it, lest he cry out against you to the Eternal. And then, let me paraphrase the last part. Then God says, I get involved, because it is sin. And so we are to watch the people around us. We are responsible for them. We have what is known as a sphere of influence. Does it have to do with the neighbors that you live next to? Absolutely. They have their own gates. But you have a provisional responsibility because you are near them. You are near them. Our neighbors, if we have servants, if we have the poor around us or the needy around us, were the poor and the needy within our gates? Could they be? How could you be a wealthy man and have poor within your gates? The thought is, it's not so much now among the front door, amongst the front doors that or the gates that we have. It now means the city gates. Does it say, therefore, that we have the poor that we know around us? Christ said what? The poor you always have living in your house. No. He said, the poor you have with you always. They are always around. They're always in the city that you live in. We live in Orange County, and they estimate, I think the last number was approximately 40,000 homeless. And that's not a big county. L.A. County to the north of us, they estimate that it could be double the homeless. So do we have a responsibility for those that we see that are in need within our gates? I'll let you answer. Tabernacles and the hearing of the word. Let's talk about that. Deuteronomy chapter 31. I mean, hopefully you're getting it. We haven't hardly left the book. In Deuteronomy chapter 31, he continues with this thought in verse 9. He says, so Moses wrote this law and delivered it to the priests, the sons of Levi, 31:9, correct. Delivered it to the priests, the sons of Levi, who bore the ark of the covenant of the eternal, and to all the elders of Israel. And Moses commanded them, saying, at the end of every 7 years, at the appointed time, in the year of release, at the Feast of Tabernacles, brethren of all the people of the earth that call themselves followers of God, the Feast of Tabernacles, when that word is mentioned, we can identify with it. We keep it. We heard it during the announcements. It's a big deal. It's always been. We have concord with this phrase. He says, at the Feast of Tabernacles, when all Israel comes to appear before the eternal your God in the place which he chooses, you shall read this law before all Israel in their hearing. We do. We have messages about the law, about God's promise, about his son Jesus Christ during the feast. And we've done that, as our history dictates, for many, many decades. And the Church of God general has done that forever. Verse 12. Gather the people together, men and women and little ones, and the stranger. It means an alien. It means not who is a part of you. Grab the stranger who is within your gates, that they may hear and that they may learn to fear the eternal your God and carefully observe all the words of this law, and that their children, whose children? The alien's children, the stranger's children, what the Jew would call the goy, the unwashed, the Gentiles, that their children who have not known it may hear and learn to fear the eternal your God as long as you live in the land which you crossed the Jordan to possess. We have a responsibility for those that walk in, either invited or not invited, if they come in peace, to attend the Feast of Tabernacles with us and hear God's word expounded. This verse says, absolutely. It not only says that, it says we have a responsibility. These are not closed sessions. I know there's people that love them to be, but they're not. If you're going to keep the Feast of Tabernacles, you got to read Deuteronomy chapter 31 in these verses. We have a responsibility. We heard that in the first message. I took mental notes. We have a responsibility for those that have been given much, much is expected. And not to share just among ourselves. I heard the word light. I heard the word bushel in the first message. And they're not to be connected. This verse underscores that. So there is this responsibility. Does God expect you to be responsible for other people's gates? No. Their homes and their families, well, if they need it, they ask for it, but your primary responsibility is yours, your gates, right? We take care of the things that God has given us first. Does God expect you to be worrying about other cities and what other areas, states, and countries? That you have responsibility for those? Where is your first responsibility? This area, it's here. Right here. Very much right here. I hope that God doesn't ask me what happened in Austin, Texas. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't live there. Then he may ask me where I do live. And then he may ask me some questions. In the areas that I have. 1 Timothy, we'll move to the New Testament now. 1 Timothy in chapter 5 has a very, very interesting, very important verse. 1 Timothy chapter 5. We'll begin in verse 3 just to set the tone for the section, not to read too much out of context. It says in verse 3, chapter 5 of 1 Timothy, honor widows who are really widows. And then drop down, he says, verse 7, and these things, he talks about different widows and different people who need help. Verse 7, and these things command that they may be blameless. But if anyone does not provide for his own, especially for those of the household, he has denied the faith. He is worse than an unbeliever. This is to take care of your own. Take care of, first and foremost, what you've been given responsibility for. I work with a lot of people, like you do, or you have worked with, and I have. And many times people, I'm guilty of it, I don't want to do my work, I want to do their work. Right? because my work's too hard. But I need to take care of what's been given to me and do it right and be responsible for it and not be meddling in somebody else's desk. We are given in this life some things to take care of, in some cases some people. In the context of the alien or the stranger or the poor among us, it could easily be extended to those ideas. A gate, there is a question. Let's use a different word. I don't want you to think of a swinging, rusty iron or bamboo gate. I want you to think of a different type of gate. I want you to think of a sphere. It's called a sphere of influence, and each one of us has it. We all have spheres of influences. If we're married, we have a sphere of influence that the sphere encompasses our spouse, our loved ones, or our children. By extension, it's the people around us, the people that we know. I can't influence anybody in Indiana. I have enough trouble influencing people who live with me, let alone someplace else. But emanating from ourselves, and what we hear repeatedly in the New Testament, and I'll give you some references if you wish to look them up, in Ephesians 2:19 and again in 1 Timothy 3:15, this word household is also extended to the concept household of God. The household of God. This. Us. I want you to think of this as out expanding spheres or gates. First, we have ourselves. Hopefully, you can influence yourself a little bit. We have a responsibility that God gives us His law by the sacrifice of Jesus Christ and the indwelling of the Holy Spirit. We have responsibility for our actions. That's the first gate. That's the first gate of the things that we do. We should have influence over ourselves. Next is our living space and the people in it, whoever that may be. As they move in and out of our lives, as people come and stay with us or the people that we're near, that's our next. Our next is our neighborhood, our city, and our state. God will not ask me what happened in San Diego or Rancho Bernardo. He'll ask other people. He'll ask me and the people I'm around what happened where we live. What did we see? What did we observe? And what did we do? So our neighborhood, our city, our state, and you can see where the spheres expand out and you have less and less and less control. So ultimately, ourselves and our living space is very important. But we also have our church family. We spend a lot of time with each other in the week. It's a lot of concentrated time. We spend hours together, our church family. The ministry has a direct responsibility for the congregations they serve. Again, they have gates. I am not responsible for what happens in San Diego. I'm just not. We don't have what's called local elders anymore. We don't use that term. It's a carryover. When I come down here, I'm still an elder, but I'm an invited elder, and I have no responsibility here. That's been entrusted to the men that are here and the deacons that you have that are here. God will not come to me and say, I need to talk to you about what's going on in San Diego. No, He won't. He will ask me about Eagle Rock. He will ask me about the church that I'm supposed to be assisting in. And so it's important. And so this church is watched over, obviously by God and Jesus Christ and His angels. But also we have people who have a sphere of influence here, and those are your elders and your pastor. It was interesting. I'm on the elders here know, because I posted them, I'm on a baby watch. And my son is expecting, well, he's not, his wife is, expecting their first child. And I'm supposed to become a grandfather from what they tell me about that. So it's kind of new to me, and I'm not quite got my arms wrapped around it yet, or my head wrapped around it. But she's due any day. And so I knew I had a long drive down here, a long drive back, and I said, wow, if I get a phone call, I have gates to take care of. And I love you all to death. I really do. We enjoy coming down here. But if I got a phone call, I emailed your elders and said, I'll be making a U-turn. Who do I call? And I got emails from your elders. Do you know why? This is one of their gates. If I don't show up, first of all, it's no big loss. Number two, they have to provide. It's their responsibility. It's their gate, their area of influence, their area of responsibility. And so these gates that you have, I'd like you to think about the number of areas that God has given you responsibility over. It could be very, very simple, straightforward, or it could be complex. Like most lives, our gates are complex. They're not so easy. But you need to identify what those are and who and what is within your gates. But there is one ultimate gate, one gate that is more important than, in my humble opinion, than others. It's a very important gate. If that gate's not taken care of, if that gate's not protected, if that gate doesn't keep bad things out and good things in, if that gate doesn't do its job, then no other gate matters. The other gates won't matter. They won't be understood. They won't be realized if this one particular gate is broken down and violated. If it's not there. Turn with me, if you would, back to Deuteronomy chapter 11. In Deuteronomy chapter 11, I skimmed over some verses that are very important in reading about these gates. You know, a mezuzah is a physical representation to do something. Right? This thing is supposed to do something. It says you're supposed to recite this blessing as you nail up the mezuzah. You recite this blessing before affixing the mezuzah to the doorpost of your home. You can only do it once. It's got to go up and stays up, never comes down until you move. Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe. It's beautiful in Hebrew. Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who has sanctified us with his commandments and commanded us to affix a mezuzah. It's a physical representation to remind people. But let's read verse 18 of chapter 11 again. The word therefore I have highlighted because it means all that has gone before, take in therefore. Therefore you shall lay up these words of mine in your heart and in your soul, and then bind them on your hand. But the most important, and he speaks it first, he did in Deuteronomy 6 in the Shema, he does it here. You shall lay up these words of mine in your heart and in your soul. Those are the two most important gates. Or the most important gate is your mind, your brain, your heart, whatever phrase makes sense most to you. That is the gate to be protected more than all others. That is the gate where God says he's going to put these words that he says over and over and over again. He wants them inside us. We know that Jeremiah tells us that he's going to give us a new heart, not one of stone, but one of flesh. And he will write these words on our heart. It all pretty much means the same thing. And those are the gates that you have that you must protect, take care of, and show the greatest responsibility for. So, within our gates is a phrase and a concept that is used throughout the Old Testament, and by example, into the New Testament, to describe that we have areas where we are to exercise influence, responsibility, protection, and control. God gives us these spheres of influence. God gives us these gates, especially the one of our heart and our mind, our soul, our eternity. So I would ask you to watch your gates. Determine where they are, what they are, and who's inside them, what's inside them. Watch your gates and guard them. Defend them against ungodly and evil thoughts, events, and people. He also says to note the alien, the stranger, and especially your loved ones, because God tells us again and again, all of them are within your gates.